Yeah, so I'm happy to speak at this workshop. My talk will be something of a continuation, or perhaps also somehow kind of a second version of what Koeman Vaff has been talking about. So that title is Topological M Theory, and it's based on a paper published with Sergei Gukov, Andy Nijsky, and Koeman. And there's also quite closely related paper by Nikita Nekrasov, entitled Z Theory. Well, I remember once my esteemed advisor at Hoofd said that we are living in the age of the one-letter theories, which something like it better than four-letter theory. So in some sense, so this will be a little bit of an impressionistic talk, because I'm talking about a topic which is, so we have some partial results, but clearly there are many more questions than results. Well, clearly I think one thing that everybody here who has been following the field of topological string theory can now sympathize with the problems that real string theorists have, namely just to define their subject. So I think still everybody would like to know kind of what is topological string theory. And of course, there's been tremendous progress in all kind of technical aspects and various kind of definitions and extensions. But if you even look at all the talks in this meeting, you will see they all are about different perspectives about this object. And so it's almost like defining this mathematical object in something like you define a manifold by using kind of various kind of coordinate patches, right? So you have Gromov-Witten invariants, there's Donaldson-Thomas, there's this kind of B model where you have to deal with complex structures, and you still would like to have like one unified picture. And clearly, that picture is not here yet, but I think it's something that's crying out for kind of a good definition. What is this theory precisely about, and how does it reduce in various corners to these kind of beautiful mathematical structures that we have kind of come to learn about? So I will talk about not the full theory, but today I want to concentrate on certain aspects. In particular, I want to restrict myself to consider Calabi-Yau threefolds. So I have some Calabi-Yau threefolds, and omega will for me always be this 3-0 form. And then we know that there are various kind of basically two topological strings that we can define. So first we have the A model, which is defined, for instance, in terms of Gromov-Witten invariants. So we have some partition function ZA, which asymptotically is written in terms of an expansion in terms of two variables, the genus and the degree of a curve. So we have maps of curves of genus G mapped into a map of degree D into X. And then we have this famous power series, Q to the D. And then here are the Gromov-Witten invariants. So, of course, this is usually kind of only meant to be some kind of asymptotic expansion. And the question is, of course, does this function really make sense as a function of these parameters? Well, similar, there is a B model. So if you look at the B model, it's given Offelman says it's kind of you quantize the moduli space of complex structures. So this is the moduli space of complex structures on X. And what do you mean exactly by that? Well, in some sense, we only have that also kind of a more kind of a sketchy result. So usually there's this beautiful period map for Calabi-Yaus. So what you look at, you don't look at the moduli space of complex structures, but the ones where you also pick a holomorphic three-form. So these are complex structures J together with the holomorphic three-form. That's a line bundle over N. And then there's the period map, which maps into the complex third cohomology group, where just omega gets mapped to its cohomology class. And then there's this kind of very nice picture. This is a symplectic space because of the intersection product. And so then this moduli space gets mapped into this Lagrangian cone here. So this is an H3. So it images half the dimensional, it's Lagrangian. And this Lagrangian cone is locally given, I will say more about it later, by the graph of some function d at 0. And then the bimodal topological string partition function, again, asymptotically, it starts off by this function f0 over lambda squared. So lambda squared plays here the role of h bar. And then there's all kind of quantum corrections here. G is greater or equal to 1. So this is already quite a bizarre result, right? So in some sense, that you have this kind of Lagrangian inside the symplectic vector space, and we very well know that that's the classical description of what would be a state in a Hamiltonian system, and then Z would actually be the WKB wave function, the semi-classical wave function associated with these data. So this already suggests that whatever this final definition of the topological string is, which would be more than just this expansion, in some sense we should try to understand why it is a wave function. So it's kind of bizarre because we're associating this to a manifold X that we think of as kind of space-time, but this clearly suggests that perhaps we want to kind of add an extra dimension somehow. So a kind of time running in some dimension X, the manifold would then be our space, and then the usual rules of quantum field theory would associate to this some set of wave functions associated to X. So this is some part of the motivation that perhaps there is a seven-dimensional theory. Seven or perhaps eight. So this is one argument to say, is there a seven-dimensional theory? Which should have various properties, but in particular it should have the property that in some sense, if you take your seven manifold to be a circle cross X, this should be directly related to doing the topological string on X. So I will be more specific in a moment. I should mention there's another reason why this wave function comes up very naturally, and that's the so-called holomorphic anomaly. And let me just state it for the ZB, but usual statement is that ZB has kind of depends also has is not holomorphic. It's not a holomorphic function. And this can also be very clearly understood in terms of quantizing this space of three forms H3. Let me just say a few words about it. So suppose we take H3 with real coefficients, and I will denote an element here with rho, then again there is a natural symplectic form, right, which is just if you have some delta rho, delta 1 wedge, delta 2 rho, this would be a natural symplectic form on it. Then there are basically other two kind of important choices to make of polarizations if you want to quantize it. So if first you take the real polarization. So that's kind of easy. So what you take is you can think of picking a canonical basis, AIBJ of H lower 3. So just a basis of three cycles, which have only intersection numbers are between AI and BI, equal 1. Then you can write momenta, which are the periods of rho around the A cycles, and coordinates, which are the periods around the B cycles, such that the symplectic form is dp dq. And then you would write in general, in this polarization, you would have a wave function, say psi, which is a function of p, for instance, of q, like for instance p. So that's one way to deal with it. There's a second obvious polarization, which is kind of complex, picking a complex polarization, which is directly related to Kähler quantization. So in that case, you take the following remark. if you think of H3 with complex coefficients now, and you pick a particular complex structure, you have the decomposition of this in the Dalbeau cohomology groups, so 3, 0, 2, 1, 1, 2, and 0, 3. And then if you take the so-called Griffith polarization, you call these your complex coordinates, and these your anti-complex coordinates. So what you're essentially are doing is now you say, you take the general holomorphic 3 form, which completely determines your complex structure, together, of course, with its scale, and you write it in terms of the reference complex structure, say, plus a variation x, which is sitting here, at least that's the at to first order. And then the relation between this omega, which sits here, and rho is that rho would be, of course, the real part of this holomorphic 3 form, omega. And then you can switch between the polarizations, completely standard formalism, and you can write the wave function, so you can kind of now write a wave function would be a function psi of x in terms of this psi of p, and you will, so that's, let me just write down a very concrete formula. You can write this in terms of just a change of polarization. So let me give a tilde to it, it's the other polarization. You have this wave function, and then get here a rather standard factor, which is I pi over 2. Let me just write it and then explain the notation. So here I'm using some notation. There's a period matrix here, tau ij, which is just the second derivative of this function at 0. And I use an inner product here, where I say the inner product between z and w is given by zi imaginary part of tau ij wj. So this is a standard rule in quantization, tells you how to go from real polarization to complex polarization. But if you look carefully here, you see there's the imaginary part of tau. There are all kind of anti-holomorphic dependencies here. So this psi of x also depends on the... So if we write the background, so in these local coordinates, we have some background x0 around we expand, and this function depends both on x0 and x0 bar. So it satisfies certain differential equations, which are not that difficult to write down, but they were first written down by Bashotsky, Chakotyoguri, and Vaffa, and they explain why this object also has anti-holomorphic dependence. So it follows completely naturally from the standard theory of quantization. So I also will come back to this relation between the fact that you can write wave functions in two natural bases, just depending on which polarization you pick. So I want to discuss some aspects of what this possible seven-dimensional theory will be, and I will mention various kind of arguments to motivate this theory along the way. So let me, before I do that, first review a little bit more how we think about the higher genus corrections in this kind of B model. So that's actually somehow what you would like to call topological string field theory. So you want to compute some kind of higher genus diagrams. So again, recall that if you have a holomorphic 3 form, omega, 3, 0 form, so then local coordinates can always be picked that's of this type. So it basically fixes the complex structure. And if omega is also closed, then the complex structure is integrable. And then you can look at variations of the complex structure. So usually that's written in terms of variation of the del bar operator. So you introduce the del bar of A, which is the original del bar, let's say A times del, where we have an object. So if you wish, you write this in local coordinates, we have this field A, something like AI J bar, DD DI wedge D G bar J bar. This is the so-called Kodaira-Spencer field. And often it's convenient to introduce A prime, which is just the inner product of omega with A. And that's a differential form of degree 2, 1. Then there is an integrability condition that says that this perturbed complex structure is integrable. So that's just the equation. This is the Kodaira-Spencer equation that in terms of this A prime can be written as del bar A prime plus del A squared prime equals 0. That's the kind of classical equation. And then you can make a quantum field theory that is based on this classical equation, and that's the string field theory. So how do you do this? Well, you say, look at infinitesimal variations of the 3-0 form. So you write the general variation of the holomorphic form as A prime. And then you can always pick a gauge, which is that del of A prime equals 0. You can pick this. And then under this gauge, you can decompose A prime in two pieces. So you can write it in terms of, let me write it like this, x plus del phi. So I make a decomposition in two parts. So first we have a zero mode. So x is the zero mode. So that's it's del bar closed. So it's an element of H21 of x. And so we can particularly take it harmonic. And these will be your local coordinates on the moduli space. But then there's also this phi, and these are the massive mode. What's in the field theory we call the massive mode. So the massive mode means that this, of course, you then A prime is del phi, and phi is in 1-1 form. So what you now do is you write a path integral using these fields. So the path integral you would write down . So remember, you want to get a function on the moduli space Mx. And the moduli space is parameterized by these coordinates x. So what you want to do is not integrate over x, but only integrate over phi. So there is an action now, that's the Kodaira-Spencer action, which has take the following form, 1/2 del phi del bar phi plus lambda over 6 a prime wedge a squared prime. And this can also be written, if you invert this relation, as a prime del bar over del a. And this has the property that if you vary this action with respect to phi, actually its equation of motion is precisely this Kodaira-Spencer equation here. So its critical points are the integrable complex structures. But now you can define a partition function. So that would be the B-model partition function. It would be a path integral over this field phi with this particular action. So this is one particular suggestion of what the B-model partition function would be. You can do something actually similar for the A-model. It's perhaps good to review this. So there's a similar construction for the A-model. So I should say this is a cubic theory. So the standard rules of field theory now tell you that, for instance, if you compute diagrams like this, that would actually contribute to the function 2, the genus 2 kind of contribution. So you can expand as a cubic and a quadratic part. So there's a standard standard decomposition in terms of Feynman diagrams. So for the A model, there's something similar. Yes? Or you can scale it out. Yes. Right, because this is not homogeneous. Yeah, so you can always either put it as 1 over lambda in front or something. Yeah. Sorry? Oh, yes, A wedge A. They're just differential forms. Right, so this is a remember, A is yes. Sorry? Yes. Yes. So, say these are one forms, anti-holomorphic one forms, and they are holomorphic vector fields. So, if you wish, it's the commutator of the, it's the commutator as vector fields because it's anti-symmetrized because it's a one form. You map it into yes. So there's a similar story for the A model. Let me just write it down because I need it. So here the fundamental field is a two form, which will play the role of the Kähler parameter. So in the A model we are kind of quantizing Kähler matrix. So this will be a 1-1 form now. And again, you have the condition that dk equals 0, it means it's integrable, integral Kähler structure. And you can do precisely the same thing. So here there's again a gauge condition. So here we have the operators del and del bar. Here the same role is played by the d, the usual differential, and dc conjugate. So I recall that if d is del plus del bar, conjugate is del minus del bar. So there's a gauge condition here, which you can write as DC conjugate dagger k equals 0. And then you make a similar decomposition of x, of k, in terms of a zero mode x plus a kind of massive mode, which is now written like this, DC dagger on gamma. And gamma is here 3 form. So it's important that the perhaps a little bit confusing. Here we're talking about changes of complex structure. The fundamental field is a 3 form, but the dynamical field that appears in the path integral is this 2 form phi. And here the roles are reversed. We're describing deformations of a 2 form k, but the things that will appear in the path integral are the 3 forms gamma. And here again you can write an action. So the action would here be, would be very similar. It's integral 1/2 d gamma wedge dc dagger gamma plus lambda over 6 k wedge k wedge k. And then you would write down a path integral over gamma. So that would be the B model version of the string field theory. So I've written down these theories because I want to make contact with them later. So let me now say some things about the kind of so we now will turn to another set of kind of field theories that you can try to define, which is all based on work of Hitchin. So Hitchin's theory of stable P forms. Really very beautiful, and there are actually a few examples I want to deal with. So in general, we look at some p-form on a manifold M of dimension D. And as Kumun explained on Monday, out of this p-form, we want to somehow write down a metric. So the metric is not fundamental. The metric on the manifold is encoded in terms of some differential form. And this that differential form has to be stable. So there's some condition that for this to work, that locally, in the space of p forms on M, you want that all forms are equivalent under the action of the general linear group. So we have some action of this group GLDR, and they should all should be equivalent under this condition. And so there are the cases that are interested for us today are the cases where p is 3 and 4, and the dimension d is 6 and 7. So let me discuss some of the examples. They will be all be relevant. So kind of the nicest example, perhaps, is the case of a 3 form. So this is a real 3 form. Rho on some 6 manifold M. So perhaps we call it X, because it will play the role of the Calabi-Yau. So there's a, just on a very down-to-earth level, if you look at the dimension of three forms, the space of three forms, so that's 6 over 3, that's 20. And if you look at the dimension of this general linear group, let me just call it G in general, dimension of G is 36. So you see that if you take a general three form, its stabilizer, so the stabilizer G rho, will have dimension 16. And the claim is that if you take a generic three form and look at its orbit under this action of GL6, that actually that orbit will be open. So it will cover a substantial part. So you somehow you have the space of three forms. You have this particular three-form row, and it will cover some open set here. In fact, the claim is the following. Rho can be written decomposed into two, three forms, which are completely decomposable. So alpha and beta are of the form omega 1, wedge omega 2, wedge omega 3, where these are 3-1 forms. In fact, there are two cases. So the first case is where the stabilizer group is SL3C. And that's actually the case that we are interested in. In that case, alpha and beta are complex, and they are each other complex conjugates. So beta is alpha bar, alpha star, just a complex conjugate. And there's a second, in that case, that means that, let me write some different notation then let's write alpha as omega. So then we write rho as omega plus omega bar. So the statement is that in general, if you pick a three form, locally at a point at least, you can always write it, if you are in this open set, as the sum of a holomorphic three form plus a holomorphic 3-0 plus a 0-3 form. The second case is the case where this group G, so I won't go into it, where the stabilizer is SL3R cross SL3R. And in that case, alpha and beta are both real. So let's concentrate on the first case, because that's the one which is relevant for us. So now we're not looking at a particular point, but now we think of the three form as an actual three form on the six manifold. So again, we write rho as the real part of omega. And then we can define another object, which is the imaginary part, say rho hat, 1 over I omega minus omega bar. And this, in general, so this, it's important to stress, this rho hat is a function of rho. Right? So it's, basically, if you give me rho, I can find omega, and therefore also omega bar, and then by doing this construction, I can get rho hat. So, in fact, what we want to write down is that this will be the Hodge dual of rho in some metric determined by rho. And in fact, if you one thing that you see, if both d rho equals 0 and d rho hat are 0, then, of course, in particular, d omega will be 0. And then the three-form omega will give us a integral complex structure. So now there's an action we can write down. So this is Hitchens' action. So Hitchens' action for the three-form rho is, in this notation, 1/2 rho wedge rho hat. But remember, rho hat is a rather pretty complicated function of rho. But if you write this in terms of the holomorphic data, you get I times omega wedge omega bar. So it's like the volume form associated to the holomorphic three form. And one nice property of this, if you vary this action, then actually it takes the form delta rho times rho hat. And that's important. So here you use the fact that the action is homogeneous of degree 2, but I should stress it's not a quadratic action. In fact, there's a beautiful construction of it, also done by Hitchin. Let me just give it to you. Yes. No, we're not. Not yet. Yeah, you can just write this down at a point if you wish. So the invariant way to do this is to do the following thing. So there is a map called K-rho, which is a map from the tangent bundle to the space of phi forms, which we can, of course, identify up to a volume form with the tangent bundle. And now you can take a vector, have it mapped into, so this is the definition of this map. You contract the vector with the 3-form, get the 2-form, and now you match again with the 3-form, so you have your 5-form. So this is a, up to this volume factor, this would be just a linear map from T to T. And now this action, rho rho hat, its definition, if you wish, is you take the trace of this map squared. So that's kind of that's the square of a volume form. And in fact, if you, I think there's a -160, take there the square root of, then it's actually a volume form. So this is the right, this is a 6-form, and that's clearly something you can integrate up. So it seems more like the square root of a quadratic expression, and it's really quadratic. Now, indeed, Ezra, if you assume that rho is closed, and that's actually what we will do, so we will say we can now vary rho in its cohomology class. So we write rho is a y plus d of beta, where y will be our cohomology class. We keep it fixed, so we have some class in X. And let's also assume it's harmonic. Then if you vary the action under this constraint, Hitchin's action will now give you that it's d beta wedge rho hat. So that's minus beta d rho hat. So now you see that at critical points, you find that also d rho hat equals 0. So this we should, now we should compare to the thing that I said in the beginning of my lecture, namely how we should think about this moduli space of complex structures. So recall we have now a picture like this. So this is the space of complex 3-forms. So it has a real part here and an imaginary part here. So here we have our kind of omega. And if we vary the complex structure, this will kind of lie on this cone. But one way to see it is if you just pick a real 3-form, then there will be, if it's in that open set, there will be kind of a unique imaginary part rho hat. So instead of describing the space of complex structures in terms of this Lagrangian cone, we're now just describing it in terms of the space of real 3-forms, which can think of this horizontal projection. So this is like a real version of the topological string, and it's closely connected to it. So this suggests that we write down some kind of quantum theory. So we would write some kind of Hitchin action. So it depends on this background flux y, and then we integrate over beta, and we use that action. Exponent, say, well, put here some coupling constant, and then we write here this kind of action, rho wedge rho hat. So this is at least one thing you can do. So this is just, again, I'm saying it's kind of an impressionistic course lecture here. So it's not quite clear whether this thing exists. But if it exists, and the question is it related to the topological string? Well, there are clear indications that it is. And in fact, if you do it in the semi-classical approximation, this is directly related to the topological string. I think Hiroshi and Mina have been talking about this. Oops. So if you take this ZB, the sort of topological partition function, which was in the leading contribution given by this F0 over lambda squared, if you do the following thing, if you write, yeah, so there's the following condition. So if you introduce some parameter here, so let me introduce some notation here. So we have this real form 3 row, and we can integrate the 3 form around the A cycles, right, which were the, we call PI, and the B cycles, which are QI. And so we fix these once and for all. These are, this is the homology class Y that is fixed. And so we want to compute the C. Hitchin as a function of these, say, P's and Q's. And so the claim is that this is related to the B-model topological string in the following fashion. This is the complex conjugate of it. So in some sense, here you see the topological string squared, but you see it's essentially a Legendre transform of this object that brings you into the Hitchin system. And indeed, you can check that, and I hope it has been a little bit explained, that if you use this particular formula for the B model, that at least if you do this path integral in the classical, semi-classical approximation, that this indeed becomes an integral of this omega omega bar, which is the same thing as this row, wedge row hat. So it's very suggestive that somehow this Hitchin system is directly related to the topological string. So this is the Hitchin system for 3 forms in 6 dimension. So there's a similar theory for 2 forms or 4 forms. Let me also mention that. So the point is that all these field theories is whether they actually really make sense, for instance, in perturbation theory. So even this kind of Cordero-Spencer theory that I was writing down, I mean, there have been very few actual computations of the Feynman diagrams. So in some sense, it looked a little bit like Chern-Simons, but of course, Chern-Simons makes sense because it's in 3 dimensions. This is in 6 dimensions. So there are, in some sense, field theories beyond dimension 4 should not exist almost. Few exceptions. And so there's some really some doubt whether this is actually something that you can compute and can work with. So for instance, in all these path integrals, there's an issue whether this is actually a definition that you can kind of make mathematically rigorous, or there's again some other ingredient that should come in to give it proper mathematical definition. I think the latter probably is the case. So, yes. Yes. Yes.
So I was wondering if there's some sort of, if there's shadows or something, if these geometric conservation ideas are meant to be shadows of something that is already formulated at some chain level.
You mean instead of just working with differential forms, you work with something more subtle or something? Well, okay, so you always, so you, the fields are almost differential forms, but you fix their periods. So you take them, they are closed, but there is within their homology class, and that's actually where you do the path integral. Yes, exactly. Yes, yes. So, since I don't have that much time, so I would say that roughly, so there's also a theory with of two or four forms. So the second theory is, actually, let me write it in terms of the four-form theory. If sigma is a four-form, again, in 6 dimensions, then the stability condition here means that sigma can be written as the square of a 2-form. And you can easily verify that generically you can do this. And if you now, again, look at the dimension, so the dimension of the space of 4 forms is 15, so now it gets 36 minus 15 is 21. So in this case, the stabilizer actually is generically SP6. So in this case, we're dealing with a symplectic structure. So we get kind of this the symplectic structure, which is relevant for the A model. And in fact, the action of, so here again, you can write the action, and Hitchens' action in this case for sigma, well, it can be written in various ways, but one nice way is that you can write it as k wedge k wedge k, where k is the two form associated to basically the square root out of sigma. And again, you can look at its variations. And if you take sigma, again, to be some fixed objects, we can call it y, so we have some fixed cohomology class, and then write it as d of gamma, where gamma is now a 3 form. If you do that variation, then you find that the variation of Hitchens' action looks like gamma wedge dk. So the equations of motions are dk equals 0, the critical points. And so these are neat integrable kind of Kähler structures. In fact, you can do something nice here. You can look a little bit more careful, for instance, at the not the first order variation, but the second order variation. So you can ask, what happens with sigma if we vary it in this way? So sigma is, say, d of gamma. But on the other hand, this would also be kind of k times delta k. So if you vary sigma in this fashion, what is the variation of the Kähler form? And just using the standard operations in Kähler geometry, so we have these operations L and lambda. So L on alpha is just wedge product of the Kähler form, and lambda is its Hermitian conjugate. And there's this nice relation that of Kähler geometry, that dc dagger can be written as the commutator of lambda and d. And then you find that up to cohomology, up to an exact piece, the variation of k is given by dc dagger of gamma. So there's some d here. And this is precisely the variation of the Kähler form that we have in the A model string theory, topological string theory. So this is precisely what you need for the A model. And if you do, in fact, look at the second order variation, you can see that in this case, this Hitchens action takes indeed this form. Plus k cubed. So you get literally this integral out. So again, it looks like it's directly related to the A model topological string. Yes? Okay, so this is an important point. So the question is, again, how do you deal with this theory? So in some sense, it's a very trivial theory. It doesn't somehow compute the actual Gorman-Witten invariance. So there are two. So the old point of view always was, well, this is only kind of in the limit of large Kähler volume, so you have to include these kind of world sheet instantons. So these, but I think the modern point of view is, well, this is actually more like Donaldson-Thomas theory. So what you in the end have to do, you have to don't really do a path integral where these k's are all smooth, but you allow k's that have singularities. Right? So in the end, you write k as, identify it as the first germ class of some possible sheaf. And that's actually, I think, a very important lesson. It tells us that if you want to really make sense of these various field theories, you probably have to do something like that. You have to have some kind of discretization or something to really make sense of it as a quantum theory. And of course, one of the big challenges is to find something analogous for these other theories that we have found for Donaldson-Thomas. So finally, I want to talk about the most interesting case that actually has these two other as its limits. And then I come to the seven-dimensional theory. So a three-form or a four-form on a manifold of dimension 7. So just some notation, the three form, phi, I write as phi ijk, dxi, dxj, dxk. And again, some simple argument, the dimension, of course, of three forms, which is equal to the dimension of four forms, is 35. And now you see that the dimension of the stabilizer, G of phi, will be 49, dimension of GL7, minus 35, which is 14. And the claim is, again, generically, the stabilizer is G2. So this is directly related to G2 structures on M7, which is very important. So just recall a little bit that if you kind of the usual way to write a canonical basis for this is you write phi as Cijk, Ei, Ej, Ek, where the Cijk are the structure coefficients of the imaginary octonions. And if you don't have these in your head, this is a kind of a neat way to remember them. So if you write just locally, write R7 as R3 cross R4, pick a basis of one forms in R3, and pick a, so these are one forms, and pick a basis, there are also three self-dual two forms in four dimensions. And then you can write phi in the following fashion, sum Ea omega A plus the three form that you can write in three dimensions. So this is one way to write it. So the wonderful thing is that whenever you have a three form, you can if you write it in this basis of one form, so it's written in this particular fashion, then there is a metric associated to it. Are they related, you mean? Yeah, there are both three of them, right? Well, there is, of course, an action which... so you pick any basis you want, yeah. So now you can define a metric. So in general, this metric will have... And it's actually just written in terms of these one forms, where now I runs from 1 to 7. So the claim is that whenever you have such a phi, then locally it gives a kind of local G2 structure, so the metric has G2 holonomy. In fact, and that's an interval G2 structure if phi is also closed and co-closed. So let me now write the relevant equations for this. So again, it's a very nice example where just a single differential form, phi, encodes a very non-trivial metric. So I should say there's a dual four form here, which, so I will write as G, it's, I would like to write as star of phi, where the star is the hot star defined with respect to the metric defined by phi, so better notation would be that the star is phi dependent. And of course, similarly, phi is the star of G, you can do it completely symmetric. And now there is an action that you can write down. So there are various ways to write the action, but so let me write one favorite way to write the action is the following. So phi I, and there are seven of them, are two forms, namely they're defined as phi I j k dx j wedge dx k. So these are two forms in seven dimensions. And now you can do the following thing. You can make a something which is very close to a metric. Namely, take phi I, wedge phi j, wedge phi. So it's cubic in phi. And if you see, it's an, but it's an element, of course, of one form tensor, what I'm saying here, seven form, no? Yes. So what do I mean by this? Well, this is clearly a seven form, right? But it's, so it's a bilinear form on the space of tangent vectors. So it's an element of this dual space. So what you now can do, so it's not really a bilinear form, it's not really a metric. So if you compute the determinant of this, you find it's an element, since this is a nine form, so this is, of its as kind of weight 9. It's of this, that's its weight. And so you find that if you compute Gij, if you define Gij now as Bij, and you normalize by the determinant of B to the power 1/9, then this is actually a proper metric. So it's a bilinear form. Yeah, this should be the other way around, right? That's what I'm confused about. So now what you can do is you can, from this metric, you can make a volume form. So square root of G, if you wish, or the determinant of G. And the nice thing is that this is also equal to phi wedge star phi. So it's an action that looks deceivingly simple. So Hitchens' action in terms of this phi is now this term, phi star phi. But it's definitely not quadratic. In fact, it's homogeneous of degree 7/3 in phi. But it has one particular important property, namely, and so of course you can also write it in terms of a dual four form. It will be G wedge C, and it will be homogeneous of degree 7/4 in G. So you can do it either way, in terms of a 3 form or in terms of the 4 form. And again, its important property is that if you, because it's homogeneous, if you vary it, you find that it's something like 7/4, the variation of G times star G. So now you can do the same thing as I've been doing with all the actions that I've shown you. Namely, you assume that this, so I do it for the 4 form, but there's a similar theory, of course, for the 3 form. You assume that it's closed. You write G in terms of its homology class. So X is an element of H4 of M. And you vary, say, with respect with an exact piece. So C is now a 3 form. And then if you now look at the equations of motion, so if you vary within this homology class, using this equation up there, the variation of the action, you find that so its critical points now give you that also D star G equals 0. So the critical points, and that's Hitchens' main result, you have DG equals 0, D star G equals 0. And that actually means that the metric Gij has G2 holonomy. So this is very suggestive to write down some kind of partition function that again would depend on this homology class. And then you have your field. Your field will be now a 3 form C. And then you have some action, which is very non-quadratic. It's this funny volume form that Hitchens wrote down. So again, the question is, does it make sense? But definitely wanted to make sense, because there are various ways in which this theory might be related, or definitely is related, to the six-dimensional theories that we're trying to understand. So very little time to discuss all the aspects, so let me just highlight a few points in the remaining 5 minutes. So some of these things have been explained by Kuhn. For instance, if you look at this theory in a Hamiltonian formalism, so you somehow take space to be a six-manifold X, and then you have some time direction, then you can look at the equations for a metric, a G2 metric, so M 7 is now this x6 cross an interval. And you can look at the equations governing basically the Hamiltonian, the evolution equations. And you get some very nice equations. Namely, you get, so first it's nice to write it in this way, the 3 form phi, you decompose. So it has an honest 3 form on x and a 2 form on x. And this will play the role, so this is the B model data, and which is the whole, the 3 form that will be related to the variations of the complex structure, and this, of course, will be A model data. So you will see somehow that the A and B model are both described, in some sense, in just the 7-dimensional theory. And the flow equations, so there are now some, these rho and k will now depend on t, and the equations, the flow equations, take the following form, d sigma dt, which is k wedge d k dt, of course, is minus d rho hat. So you see that in particular, if you have a solution which is stationary, so which it doesn't have any time dependence, then both k is closed and rho hat is closed, which means that you get actually a Calabi-Yau. You have an integral Kähler structure and an integral complex structure. So particularly, you see that if you have manifolds, if you take these theories and they are time independent, we get the Calabi-Yaus and we get the situation that we want to describe the topological string theory on. But in fact, you can do much more because there are many other cases you can consider. So in particular, you can write down, and I'm afraid I'm, because of lack of time, I cannot say much more here. Yeah, well, but not too much. So, so in some sense, you can try to write down this. So it's very interesting to look at the Hamiltonian. So let me just say a few words about that. So of course, you have to make a split. So for instance, we had our dynamical field was a 3-form C. And you can write it again, I'll also decompose it as kind of gamma plus beta wedge dt, where I, let me just indicate with a index that this is a 3 form and beta is a 2 form. And in the same way, you have g, which is the some background value plus dc. So this is the gauge field, if you wish. G is its curvature, and you compose that as sigma plus rho hat times dt. This is a 4 form, this is a 3 form. And then you have this condition that the star of G, which is phi, is rho plus k dt. So now you can just go ahead and try to quantize this theory using the standard rules of kind of Hamiltonian quantization, and you find some interesting things. So the first thing that you find is that, so you see that your dynamical, so what are your variables? So it turns out the variables are two. So first of all, we have gamma. So gamma is a 3 form on the Calabi-Yau. But in fact, since it's a gauge field which determines a 4 form field strength, there is a gauge invariance where you can always add to gamma the derivative of a 2 form. So in fact, it sits in the space of 3 forms, modulo the exact 3 forms. And then in fact, you can see what is the conjugate variable to gamma, so the momentum. And you find, so this is like the coordinate in this Hamiltonian system. And then there's a momentum, and the momentum gets played by this variable rho. And in fact, you find from the equations of motion that rho is closed. So rho actually takes an element, is an element in the closed free forms. So this is like the momentum. And then you can write down the Hamiltonian. This is the. So in fact, you can first write the action, which is kind of the, in the Lagrangian formulation. And the Lagrangian formulation actually looks at rho d gamma dt. plus rho which rho hat plus k cubed. So this whole thing, of course, integrated over x, this Lagrangian density. And you see actually already two interesting pieces. So here you see kind of the Hitchin action for the free form. So this is again related to the B model. And here you see it for the two form. So it's related to the A model. And in fact, you also see that in this quantum theory in seven dimensions, the variables that are relevant for the A model and the B model are each other's canonically conjugate variables. So it looks like that if you want to define somehow really this quantum theory, that somehow A model and B model are non-commuting. So that's, again, very suggestive, but don't really know what precisely to do with that. More interesting is that this is the Lagrangian density. Using just the standard rules of quantum mechanics, you can get the corresponding Hamiltonian. And in fact, the Hamiltonian is now rho rich rho hat minus k cubed. And you see that it's something like the action for the A model, well, for the A model plus the B model. So, well, there's very much more to be said. For instance, one thing that you're, of course, very much interested, to which way you can really map, for instance, these separate theories for A model and B model directly to the topological string partition functions. But there are at least certain limits you can make contact with that. So that's, again, very suggestive. So perhaps the last thing I want to say so again from this, as you have heard from Hiroshi and Mina, from physics there are some other ingredients, namely there was this partition function, remember I wrote it somehow, this Hitchin function just the one which was relevant for the B model. And in fact, physics has something much more important than this. So this is something which was related roughly to the B model topological string squared. But it says something much more. Because of this relation with black holes that I hope you've heard something about, this should not be any function. This, in fact, should be an integer. And that's not completely unbelievable from this kind of seven-dimensional point of view. So for those of you who are familiar with that, so remember the relation between conformal field theory in two dimensions and Chern-Simon theory in three dimensions. So in some sense, I guess we are proposing that topological strings in six dimensions, real six dimensions, should similarly be related to this kind of topological M theory in seven dimensions. Now, in particular, so you would have the following structure. In some sense, if you quantize your theory on X cross R, something like you would like to have some Hilbert space associated to this. Sorry? So remember, P and Q were just these labels of this homology class. So there are, yes, fixing P and Q. So PQ was an element of H, in this case, H3 of X, actually with integer coefficients. There's also a quantization rule. So this should be, for instance, as it should be compared, for instance, if you do a gate theory, you would have, you know, you would pick, for instance, a Maxwell theory. You would pick a line bundle on your four manifold, right? So you fix the topological class. Yes, yes, precisely. So somehow this should be an integer. And I mean, that's not completely strange, because in general, you would have a Hilbert space associated to a manifold X if there is such a seven-dimensional theory. And then, of course, if you kind of have to take the manifold to be X cross a circle, you would close it off. And you would somehow compute the dimension of this Hilbert space. So the fact that there are kind of integers hidden within topological string theory, again, suggests in some sense also very strongly that there should be a seven-dimensional point of view. Because why would be a partition function of a string theory or a field theory be an integer? That would be very strange. And the only way to kind of understand that is if there is somehow a trace or something really computing a dimension of a certain vector space. So I have to apologize that this is all kind of very vague. I think it's not all clear how the whole thing fits together, but I would be very surprised if this somehow the seven-dimensional theory and G2 structures are then not playing an important role, because it really is bringing somehow all the ingredients together. But, so thank you for your attention.